My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Welcome to another episode of Pixels and Polygons. I am back again. New week, new episode. Getting ahead of the groove here. Editing this one well in advance, which is a first for me. That's a good thing. We have a first-time guest on the show today, brand new to our little universe here. But we've got Dave, who is from Tales from the Backlog, his own podcast that is well worth listening to and gets a huge recommendation from me. So do check that out in the show notes below. Just found each other through Blue Sky. And again, I've talked about that before, but the mutual conversations that have happened over there have led me to meet a lot of new folks like Dave. So welcome, Dave, to the show. He'll introduce himself at the start of the episode as we talk about this week's topic, which is gameplay versus narrative, and the balance of that and which we prefer, and some examples when, you know, maybe the gameplay was much better than the narrative or vice versa, and how we like to tip those scales. We've done this maybe once or twice, but it was quite a while. It's been a minute since we've actually had someone answer this question. So I do like that Dave picked this. Otherwise, business as usual. pixelsandpolygons.net. Go ahead and check that out for all of my physical books, Retro Game Zine, which Final Fantasy XI should be being posted on there to physically buy any day now, if it's not already there. Also, patreon.com/DarrenHupke. You can find the digital shop there, so you can buy digital copies of the Retro Game Zine and 32-bit library. But the Retro Game Zine issue 3 for Final Fantasy XI is already available digitally, so you can buy that there now. I'm just making sure that all of the Kickstarter copies are shipped out before I sell it to anybody else, because I'm just trying to be helpful towards those folks who supported me through Kickstarter before I just start selling as everyone else. Makes sense. Otherwise, same old. I mean, really, just working on the same books in the background. I should have the Kickstarter landing page for the next three issues of Retro Game Zine soon. I've been kind of like forced to, you know, while I'm still feel like I'm finishing and ending this whole process for issue 2 and 3 or 3 and 4. Production will, you know, has to happen for the next issues, and in order for me to get the funds, do the printing, receive it, and ship it all out, and make sure that it's happening by May, that kind of has to happen now. So I am making this campaign being a three-issue campaign where you can buy either any of the individual issues or buy all three together, so make it pretty easy for folks. But doing it for 3 months will allow me enough time to produce and ship and handle all the production side of things with plenty of lead time and not have to worry about, you know, ending one campaign just to jump into another and do what I'm doing right now. But otherwise, that's all I've really got. Still playing some games, still having some fun, still, you know, doing my thing. So I appreciate y'all for listening. I do request and ask that you like and like comment or review the podcast on the podcast platform you're listening on. That does help. If you've purchased any of my books or any of like the zines or anything that I've done, like reviews on Amazon or Goodreads or all, you know, whatever it is that you have an outlet to do so, that goes a long way. There's crazy algorithms and, you know, the machine of it all. In order to get it in front of new folks, things like that happen and matter and help somebody like me who's kind of self-publishing and self-producing all these things all independently. So any likes, any comments, any shares, any feedback, when you post that online, please tag me, but yeah, please post that online. That gets in front of, you know, new folks, people in your own friend circles that you may not realize might be interested, and kind of spills out from there. So thank you for your support so far. Thank you for listening to the show, buying any of the books, reading any of the zines, doing any of the stuff, any of it, all of it. Thank you. We will be back again next week with another fun episode. But for now, enjoy our new episode with Dave and get to know him, and enjoy. See you all next Friday. Bye. Welcome to another episode of Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. This is my show, and each week I got a guest. And so my guest this week is a new guest to the show. I feel like 2025 has been really awesome to bring a lot of like first time people to the show. Technically, episode 50, I technically had that be considered my first year anniversary, but there's been a lot of new folks in this calendar year. So another new folks, a new name. We got Dave from Tales from the Backlog. Dave, you want to introduce yourself and kind of say hi?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for having me. It's good to chat with you. And so for those who maybe have not heard my voice before, I'm the host of Tales from the Backlog, which is a weekly mostly backlog games, kind of deep dive analysis, review, critique, all in one type show. So every episode is one game in depth, usually about 2 hours or longer. And the first half or so of every episode is no spoilers. So if you're thinking about checking out the show, if you like what I have to say from here on out, you can basically listen to any episode because we're not going to spoil things until we warn you.
Yeah, I've listened to quite a few. I just think it's really clear and organized in that regard. So, like, even jumping into episodes, like, to at least hear a conversation about it to start things off and kick things off, and you know you can break away free without having things ruined after the fact. It's really organized and really well done. And I don't know. I think it's your tone or your candor or whatever, but it does just sound like a really informative, like, conversation. It's not just, like, you know, two people like yelling at each other or sharing hot takes and all that stuff. It always is like a good sounding conversation. Just hearing people's perspectives and thoughts on like the design and the entertainment value and just like, you know, the things all involved with the game. So it is a really good show. So I definitely recommend y'all to check it out. I subscribe myself personally, but it's a rad one. So if you're looking for another video game podcast for sure, it's got my endorsement, whatever that's.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I definitely try to be more on the informative side of things. You know, you start a show and you want to make a show that you would want to listen to. And those types of podcasts are what I like to listen to. I like to listen to people who take the art seriously. So that's kind of the vibe of my show, too.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, I don't want to like just, you know, disparage anything, but like the negative ones, the ones that like to dunk on things or have like the hypercritical, like hot take. I'm not typically a hot take person, though I say that, and the next episode we're going to record is the fun hot take episode. But in the spirit of things in general, like if you like something, talk about it. If you don't like something, you don't have to spend the energy to tear it down or take it back. And unless it's a legitimate like critique and an exercise in exploring what it is about it, you know, that's all good and fun. Like, you know, please, you know, continue to do that. But just to dunk on things, being negative about things, like I'm never that energy. And so, yeah, listening to your show, like it's really just kind of informative and listening along, it definitely sounds like I don't want to say like positive, but I mean, it's got an energy to it that is one that does not feel like it ever is going to tread close to that water and make somebody be turned off or awkward about the conversation at hand. So, yeah, great job.
Well, thank you very much. Kind words.
Let's roll in this thing. I'll have the links and stuff like that that you want to plug in the show notes as well, so you can send those to me offline, and I will be sure to include those. So if you're listening to this, they should already be down in the show notes below, but any social medias and websites and the podcast and all that stuff, you should be able to find links very easily to be able to find that as you need to. But that being said, we're here to do a thing. We're here to answer one question. But before we do that, we got to get warmed up. And we got some this or that's, and then the icebreaker question. So you ready to go?
Let's go.
Okay. We'll do a big one off the top. This or that. Console or PC?
Lately it's PC, because I count the Steam Deck in PC, so lately it's been more PC than anything for me.
Okay. Single player or multiplayer?
Single player, 99% of the time. I'm a single player guy, yeah.
Run and gun or beat 'em up?
Ooh, that's tough. I don't like either of these genres very much. Give me the beat 'em up, I suppose.
Okay.
They tend to be a little bit easier.
Let's see. Monster Rancher or Monster Hunter?
Monster Hunter by default. Never played a Monster Rancher before.
Yeah. See, I get it. I'm maybe a little bit older or whatever, but the second time I've asked this, and it's the same response. It's like, yeah, I just never really played Monster Rancher. So
yeah, I mean, like, I was there when Monster Rancher was there also, but I just never played it. Yeah.
Let's see. One more. Let's go. Medieval or sci-fi?
I guess medieval, but it's not. It's a really close race, but I got to pick something. So I'll go with medieval just off top of my head. I like fantasy a lot. So that tends to be more, more medieval, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Okay. Well, there we go. So that hopefully got the blood flowing. So now you can be prepared for the icebreaker question itself. let's see, which shall we ask you? Let's see, what is something you miss from a previous generation? What is something that's not just present in your modern gaming experience that you miss from an older generation?
That's tough. I miss game manuals, and I miss like buying big tome strategy guides for stuff. Like, I still have my Morrowind strategy guide on my shelf back there, and it's just a thing that I'm sure they print strategy guides still, but like, I don't know. Since you can just go on and find, you know, and people are working really hard on like the strategy guides on websites and stuff, like, I'll go check those out nowadays. And like, I just miss popping a game open, reading the manual to see how to play. You know, nowadays, especially if it's like, you know, like a lesser known game, I really hate being stuck on something and having to like scrub through a video let's play or something to, you know, try to find someone in the same place that I'm at to try and figure out what to do, instead of, you know, if I could buy the strategy guide or maybe just read the manual and be like, oh, you know, maybe there's a mechanic I didn't know about. That happens to me sometimes. So I miss that. I mean, like, obviously a lot of people say, you know, I miss on the car ride home, reading the manual after you bought a game and streetlight to streetlight and all that. And I definitely miss that. But I mean, I have some games on my shelf that have the manuals in them, some GameCube games. I just like to read them sometimes. Like, it's a lost part of the experience of buying a new game.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Yeah, that just makes me, you know, think about a lot of those missed things there. I'm hoping that maybe we're on the cusp of a returning trend or something, but there was a Kickstarter recently for the hand-drawn game guides from Philip Summers. He's doing a Mega Man guide. It's officially licensed from Capcom and everything. And so it's going to be a legitimate strategy guide and walkthrough for the game, but filled with his like original artwork and like hand-drawn like maps and everything from the levels and stuff. And so like, I'm hoping it scratches that nostalgic itch and that, you know, that throwback to that time and everything, to be able to have something physically and tangible there to reference. Sure, it is for a retro game and everything, but I'm hoping people just start to see manuals like that or guides like that again and think to themselves to like kind of create their own, like even taking the known internet content that's there, but putting it together in like a neat like guide, like, and having it on hand for reference and everything. Like, it's kind of an irreplaceable thing to do.
Yeah, there was, I mean, this is no shade towards online guides writers, because like I said, I use their work. They work really hard. I know several people who do it for a living. But there is a lost art of like their actual lost art from like the book versions, where you'd have like concept art and hand-drawn pictures and like maps and stuff like that. as opposed to, you know, here's a list of this enemy's stats and stuff like that, where, you know, I love a game facts guide as much as the next guy, but I do kind of miss flipping through and seeing, like, here's all the monsters, here's their stats, here's what they drop, all that stuff from the old strategy guides. One other thing I've kind of noticed recently, and this is, again, unique to indies, but I played a couple games in the last couple years that have in-game manuals, like actual manuals, like Lorelei and the Laser Eyes had one, Lunacid had one, which I just finished. Tunic, of course, has its famous manual, which is a little bit more involved than the other ones. But the other ones, like, literally just in the art style of the game, they have the actual game manual. You just open it up and read how to play. And I like that. It's a nice nostalgia hit, and it's useful for teaching you how to play.
Cool. Yeah. But, yeah, I think it's cool. That's a good answer. I mean, it makes me a little nostalgic and, you know, wishful, you know, for a different time, a time gone by. But, yeah, I love a chunky strategy guide. I mean, I love a chunky book. I'm staring at, I mean, my bookshelf here in my room is all of my, like, retro gaming books and video game related books, but a big, heavy hardcover. Like, I love to, like, flip through and everything. And then I have a whole wall of, like, my comics, but, like, the massive hardcover re-release or special editions or slipcases, I'm always a fan of those, just to be able to, like, dive in and, like, flip through and have those paper and those pages in front of you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that answer. Cool. All right. Well then, we're going to move into the main episode topic, and this is one that you picked in advance. So hopefully you're able to, you know, think about some things and have some things you want to kind of chat about, but I'd love to hear your thoughts. But what is more important to you, narrative or gameplay? And are there games that you've enjoyed with a poor narrative but great gameplay, or vice versa? But just thinking about the scales and the balance of, you know, like, to you, like, what is more important in that game package, you know, narrative or gameplay?
Okay. So I was thinking about this because I've been playing Monster Hunter Wilds recently, which
small loss of audio here from a network hiccup. Sorry.
Known for focus on, like, making sure that you pay attention to the story. Like, there's more of the slow down and walk and listen to people talk. There are more set pieces, more conversations to listen to, stuff like that. And I don't think the story is very good. I don't think it's interesting at all. It is there as a vehicle to get you from fight to fight and to teach you how to play the game and to introduce you to your, you know, your helper NPC characters around your camp, people that might travel with you and stuff like that. But as a story, it is, it's not interesting in the slightest. But I love the game. I love Monster Hunter Wilds. I'm having a great time playing it. So when I first heard this question, my mind immediately snaps to, I'm a story guy. If you look through the list of games on my show, I've done, there's like over 150 games now, and most of them are story-focused games. That doesn't mean that they're gameplay light, but it's usually a story that's like a cool story premise will draw me to a game more so than an interesting gameplay premise. But I'm having a great time playing Monster Hunter. I've put in, you know, over 10 hours a week since it came out. So I'm like, I'm having a great time. I think the story's trash, but it does not affecting my time playing the game whatsoever. So it's interesting when we think of, like, I have my first thing that comes to mind, but obviously all these exceptions pop up all the time. Think about, like, the, you know, platformers from the Super Nintendo or the NES. Like, the stories were either non-existent or they were, you know, bad or not interesting, in my opinion. Like, who cares about a Mario story? I mean, if you care about a Mario story, I'm not taking that away from you, anybody. But for me, I'm not playing Super Mario World because I'm interested in the characters or something like that. But that's not the point of those games. And it's kind of weird to me that a lot of those old platformer mascot series have kind of felt like they've started to shoehorn stories in there because it's, like, expected of them when the gameplay was why people were playing in the first place. It's a big tangent to say it kind of depends.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, to what you were kind of alluding to and sharing, like, I also I lean towards like a story focused game. I grew up loving RPGs and everything, but I mean, even then, like just a good like story, like third person adventure or action game, you know, like it really doesn't matter like the genre. Like that is what I'm involved with when I'm playing a video game. I mean, I love movies, I love books, I love comics. I love a good story, but video games having that interactive element just kind of makes it intangible compared to those other things. And so
yeah,
gameplay needs to be there, but I'm okay with, you know, a reduced or ineffective like gameplay mechanics and moments if it's still like telling a great story. But I think your example with Monster Hunter Wilds is like, it's crazy. I saw, because I've seen since launch like the reviews of like folks talking about how like, oh, you know, like the game appears to have sanded off its edges and, you know, it's a more approachable Monster Hunter than ever before. And I'm very confused by that because it is a very obtuse game with like bizarre mechanics and like so many layers of UI and like really ineffective design that I don't know how any new players are approaching the game. People yeah. who love that game are returning players. And like I myself return to it because of my enjoyment of Monster Hunter Worlds, like that loop, that gameplay loop, like I was involved in, and I loved that game. And it did have some light story and everything into it, but they definitely felt like they ratcheted that up in this game and tried to have like a narrative here that was like a lot longer. Like some of those cutscenes are a lot longer in this game, and it is very, this one dimensional, you know, like the characters don't have like an arc where they like learn or grow from anything or respond to the adversity and evolve or anything. It is who those NPCs and everybody they introduce you to right in the beginning have the same motivations and drive at the end of it. And it is just like this strange vessel they use that almost like it's probably the biggest flaw of the game, but it doesn't ruin it enough for me to even like, wouldn't even consider like putting the game down or like, you know, disparaging yeah. it at all. Like it is still a game that I'm going to probably say is a 9 out of 10 style experience that like, you know, I would highly recommend. The easy thing to do was, and I did it for probably the last 3 or 4 missions, skip cutscene. Like it just dropped me in front of a monster. I'm like, oh, there we go. I know what to do now.
Yeah.
I will get my hammer and I will destroy this thing.
It's an interesting thing because they put you in a lot of those cutscenes or, you know, people have talked about like the forced slow walk to an objective so you can talk about what's going on and stuff like that. But for most of my playthrough, I've been in voice chat with friends who I'm playing the game with. So I'm like half reading and half, you know, talking to my friends. So like, I still don't think the story is that interesting, but it's like that stuff hasn't really bothered me because then I just, you know, I just talk to somebody or something like that. It's like, so if you're looking at it from like a critic's perspective, like you said, I'm of the belief that if the game wants me to pay attention to it, then it's fair game for like serious criticism. If I think the story is boring or doesn't go anywhere, there's no character development really, it's just get you from monster to monster to monster to monster in this like never ending thing that Monster Hunter gets you on this treadmill. The story feels like the same way. Like your gear trees escalate, your resource gathering escalates, and the story just keeps, oh, there's more monsters. You'll never believe it, but there's more monsters. Yeah. Like it just keeps going like that. And so I think that if the game is going to force me to sit through those cutscenes and stuff, then it's fair game to say that the story is not good. And I kind of like thinking like if they ever make a Monster Hunter game with like a seriously good story, it might be the best game ever made because it will still have like that gameplay element and stuff like that too. Like what if they forced you to reckon with, you know, how many apex predators you're slaughtering across the environment and stuff like that. In Monster Hunter Wilds, there's like one little line of dialogue where the kid is like, hey, don't, and then you do the thing anyway. Yeah. So it's my thing on this like gameplay versus story thing is like if they're both a focus of the game, then like my favorite games of all time are going to be either the ones that like hit on both of those, or they're going to be like a super narrative experience with very, very light gameplay, like 1000 Times Resist or you know, like a walking sim or something like that. Like those can absolutely blow me away too, without that gameplay element. On the other hand, I really like, you know, the Super Nintendo Final Fantasy games, 4 and 6, the ones I've played. I don't think the gameplay is anything special there, but I'm willing to sit through that. I'm willing to do that. It's not necessarily engaging my strategic brain really in those games, but I like the stories and I like the characters and I love the music and I love the other parts of the experience. So, you know, a gameplay system that doesn't blow me away, it's not really like a huge negative for me in an experience like that. It all kind of depends on like what is like the point of the game. The point of Monster Hunter is not the story, so the story is never going to be like a determining factor on whether I recommend people try Monster Hunter or not. And then for Final Fantasy, at least like the older ones, the turn-based combat is like, it's there, you got to do it, you got to learn how to do it, but it's not like the point of those games. So I have like pretty large criticisms about a lot of my favorite games like that and their combat systems and stuff, but that's not the point of Final Fantasy VI. So it's not going to really factor into how much I love that game. The fact that I think the combat gets kind of boring, it's not really a big deal, you know? I don't know if you feel the same way.
No, I mean, I think it's the same thing. I mean, like, to the overall point, there's not a right or wrong answer to this question. And you know, when crafting it, I wasn't looking for like one route or the other, but I definitely, right. I feel like I'm on the same wavelength as you. I mean, it really just depends on the game and, in this game, like, this is not that core component that people are coming to in Monster Hunter Wilds for that. It would be a great asset. I mean, it would be a great addition. Like, it would be a bonus, you know, if like, oh, suddenly the story was awesome. Like, oh, cool. Yeah. Like, rad. I had this awesome thing to get to through. But at the end of the day, I'm getting to these high rank hunts. I'm in my loop. I'm gathering my resources. I'm getting better gear. Like, I know what I'm doing. So like, I don't expect that out of Monster Hunter, you know, but you know, when looking at like a new property or a new game or an unknown quantity, my gut tells me I want to play a game with, like a quality story. Like that might be what I default try and strive for. So if I'm playing a total unknown and I'm not getting a very good story, I might be quicker to maybe drop that than it would be if, you know, I knew what to kind of expect, you know. I mean, I guess there isn't really, I mean, it's case by case and all that stuff, but I think I lean towards story. If I had to like tilt the scale a little way, I think I have a bit more weight on the story side of things, but I allow it to kind of be fluid because it's going to be different, especially depending on the genre and the mood that I'm in, on what I want to expect and everything.
Yeah, I definitely want to kind of like mix it up more. I want to give myself the time and the space to play more video game ass video games, you know, like a Crazy Taxi or a sports game or, you know, like a puzzle game or something like that. Like, I don't play a whole lot of those. And so I think that like I do lean more towards something with a story, because I think if I were to make a list of the games that have impacted me the most, aside from like Pokemon when I was a kid, like, the huge majority of those are going to impact me because either the story was incredible or they had like a really great merging of gameplay and story together. There's very few things on my list of games that impacted me a ton where it's like pure gameplay. You know, I love Monster Hunter Wilds. I'm having a great time, but in 5 years, I'm not sure that I'm going to, you know, think about Monster Hunter Wilds and get a feeling in my chest the same way that I do when I think about the first time I played What Remains of Edith Finch or 1000 Times Resist last year, like really hit me like that. And I think those are the ones that really stick with me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. I'll share one last thing, and this is more of a motivation for me to actually do this, but there's a Eurogamer post on Blue Sky that I saw, but from the producer of Monster Hunter Wilds, it says,
"Oh yeah.
Yeah, Monster Hunter Wilds has seen huge success and the series producer has put that down to the emphasis on story." And that just got me thinking, like, you know, well, there's a big miss there. Like, that's not why it's doing well.
Yes. yeah.
I'm glad it's doing well, but then that's just what got me thinking about like the cycle we're in with video games now. Like, how do most people plan their next purchase? Because, like, as a kid, I used to pick up EGM and want to see some review scores. I wanted to justify that a good game was coming and everything. But as an adult, especially with the internet, like, I kind of know my taste. I kind of know the flavors I want. Like, I'm going to buy a game whether or not a review says it's good or not. Like, I kind of want to, it's something speaking to me, so I want to try that. I want to give that firsthand and all that stuff. So I didn't come into Wilds, like, I was hoping it was going to be great because I loved Worlds. So my whole drive to purchase Wilds was based on my interaction with Worlds. It was the previous game. And so our average gamers or our common folks, like, you know, most of the time having that like the influence of what their next purchase might be, is it stem from primarily from a previous title in a series or so? Or does it come from just that word of mouth and like that, you know, that community vibe and all that stuff? Because my expectation for Wilds was, if it's more of Worlds, I will enjoy this. So great. Mm-hmm. But then I came into it and saw like this whole story aspect of it. And I'm like, wow, they really ratcheted this up. Like, this is kind of unnecessary. This is, I mean, I even the on rail stuff, I don't want to have to do this. It's getting in the way of me enjoying the part that I really want to enjoy. And so I've wanted to write this article. I've wanted to kind of write something up on my thoughts on what drives us to purchase something. How do we give credit to what could be in a game like this, a flash out of the gate, out of launch, seeing huge success? Like, where can we credit that success to? Like, is it just a large player count and people seeing high Steam play numbers? Is it because that previous game was so impactful that we were so ready to just jump on blindly here? Or are there actually people who are responding to reviews and critics and everything that help lead into these purchases? But I feel like we're in a different era now than it was in that older style of releases in the older generations and eras. So I want to write that up. So I'm speaking this out loud so that I do put that idea to thought and maybe post that. But I don't know if you have any thoughts on that otherwise, but yeah, we've kind of touched on all of it.
Yeah. Well, we do live in like an era where we have basically unlimited voices and opinions that we can take in. Whether you go seek out to like actually read reviews or watch, you know, people's stuff on YouTube about a new release, or if you're just, you know, in a Discord server full of people who love video games, you're going to hear opinions and you're going to hear people share. A lot of people do, you know, fantasy critic leagues and stuff like that. Now that might be more on like the more serious game enthusiasts, but like, I don't know if it's as simple as it used to be where you would like get a Nintendo Power, read one review and be like, oh, they said it was good, so let me check this out. Like, that's literally why I bought a lot of games when I was like a kid or a teenager, because like the one magazine I had a subscription to said it was good and the pictures look cool, so we'll go rent it for a weekend or go buy it. I don't think it's that simple anymore. Like with Monster Hunter, there's been a bunch of momentum through World and then Rise, and then this one comes out, it's cross play, so like you can play with anybody who owns the game, just kind of removing barriers. Like Rise was only on the Switch for a while, like in World was only on PlayStation and on PC, so like now obviously this one's not on the Switch, but like those barriers are broken down. The last couple games reviewed really well. It's a lot more mainstream than it was 10-15 years ago. So, and then you do have all these voices coming in, you know, no matter whose show you listen to or who you watch or who you read, or if you're just, you follow a bunch of people on Blue Sky, you're just going to get more opinions than you probably even asked for on most of these new releases.
Yeah. It's the internet though. It's just interesting. I I'm at the age that now I realize that, I'm okay. I trust myself to, if I'm interested in a game, to allow myself to try it. And if I don't like it, I trust myself enough to know that that's okay. Like that was a miss and it's okay. Maybe it's for somebody else, but it doesn't have to bother me, or I don't have to critique it. I don't have to go on the internet to complain about it. Like, I can just accept the experience for what it is. And most of the time, like I kind of know the flavors that I like and I can see through what something is trying to accomplish and maybe still find the good in it. And, you know, even if it's a good 6 or 7 out of 10 style game, I still may love that as much as I love a 9 or 10 out of 10 game, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, interesting. Well, we did it then. That's it. That's the thing. We answered the question and that's the show. So, thank you for jumping on. People don't know this. They don't need to know this, but I do always spoil this part of it. We will immediately be recording another episode after this. So I will talk to you shortly after this. But for everyone who is listening to the episode itself, did you have any final thoughts or plugs or shares you wanted to say before we wrapped up? But yeah, otherwise we answered the question and we did the thing.
We did. Yeah. It's a very open-ended question and Monster Hunter has been on my brain. So happy to get a chance to kind of talk out some of this stuff. It's a good time and looking forward to the next one, which we're going to have to wait a long time to record it, but I'm looking forward to it.
Right on. Well, thank you for joining me again. Check the show notes for all the links and references to everything where you can find your stuff and listen to Tales from the Backlog. But yeah, we will catch you on a future episode. Dave, thanks for joining.
Yeah, thank you.